of sunshine. The weekend is going to be a mixed bag with sunshine and showers. Arlene, back to you.
Thanks, Thomas. Now on Radio 4, a fourth extract from The Pink Sari Revolution by Armarna Fontella Khan. Shilu, a rape victim falsely accused of theft, is terrified of the gangster politician Duifedi. Alarmed by the increasing profile the case is getting in the community and to the press, and he and his goons are now threatening everyone involved in the case. But the Pink Gang are on hand to defend Shilu. Mira Sayal is the reader.
On December the 19th, Sampath made her way to Bandha jail to meet Shilu. She was alone. It was not yet time to involve the Pink Gang. She hoped to sneak in and speak to the girl undisturbed, and with the help of a young relative working there, she was able to get in to see her. "Shilu, I am Sampath Pal," she said. "I am with the Pink Gang. We will get you justice. Don't speak here. Tell everything in court. Don't change your statement and don't be scared if they put pressure, huh? Do not fear. I am here and I will fight for you." Conducting proper investigations had been one of the first rules Sampath had laid down in the Pink Gang. She didn't want her members to fight against people without having all the proper information. "Don't just believe what you hear," she would say. She taught them to avoid ending up on the wrong side of an argument. "I always get to the bottom of a story," Sampath says. The day after her visit to the jail, the Hindustan ran an article about it. "The commander of the Pink Gang, Sampath Pal, has declared that she will start a movement for Shilu Devi's release. She asks, where is the stolen rifle? If a rifle has been stolen, it must be produced in court." Sampath says the police should look seriously into this matter, otherwise the Pink Gang will move into action. She then told the media that she wanted to know why the legislator had taken Shilu from Patara himself instead of getting the police involved. "Duivedi is not above the law," she told journalists who contacted her. "No matter how powerful you are, punishment should be given." Then Duivedi rang Sampath himself. "Sister, what wrong have I done? If you want, I can resign from my legislator position." "Why? Because it looks like you don't like my work." "Let's meet, huh? I don't want to discuss on phone. I can send a car to fetch you." "If you are so innocent, why are you acting like someone who has blood on their hands?" The politician persisted. "I am coming to you like a brother with my head bowed and asking for forgiveness." This angered Sampath even more. "You should be asking Shilu for forgiveness, not me." It is not good to talk of this on the phone," said the frustrated Duivedi. "Where are you now? I'll send a car to pick you up." "Hello. Hello?" Sampath had hung up. Duivedi would later tell journalists it was because of his friendship with Acce, a member of the same political party, that he allowed Shilu to stay at his house after Shilu lost her honour by going with her boyfriend to live in Patara. He also hinted that she was a troubled girl who needed to be reformed. "She has a big history," he said vaguely, and mused that jail might make a change in her for the good. He also categorically denied the accusations that Shilu was making. "I gave her respect like a daughter and kept her with my family," he said, blaming her allegations on his political opponents. It was a setup. As public outcry over Shilu's arrest grew, those wanting to protect the legislator stepped up their pressure on Sampath. Duivedi's uncle came by daily, but Sampath avoided him. Her kindly landlord, Luckan, told her to stay away for a few days, worried that the legislator's men would take her away and threaten her. Radhe Shukla, the feared sub-inspector who was obstructing Sampath's investigation, also paid a visit, finding only the landlord. "Why don't you change her mind?" he cajoled him.
You're a Brahmin, I'm a Brahmin, so is the legislator. We're all brothers. Sampath should not be agitating like this.
Luckan, not looking for trouble, said he would do what he could. He grew increasingly nervous that this case could lead to great trouble, and he urged Sampath to be cautious. The pressure grew, this time on Shilu's father. Dwivedi's men allegedly barged into his house and intimidated his other terrified children, threatening to wipe out his whole family if Shilu didn't change her statement. Soon after this, Acce went underground, rumoured to be living in the ravines with the local bandits. They intimidated Sampath too, but she made sure not to tell her family of the threats. After she declared that the Pink Gang would start a movement for justice for Shilu, a journalist rang her and warned her to lock her door.
"Because some men were asking for me and to stay alert," Sampath recalls. "Are they gods that I should be afraid, huh? They are just men, that's all," she replied defiantly. "I didn't think about what would happen to me. In this world, at least one person has to fight. All over the world, someone comes forward who has courage. What would be the use if everyone were scared? This is India. There have been so many battles here. You have to forget your life and not be scared. That's how the country will make progress."
Her only concern is her family.
"If they start worrying, that weakens me. So I don't tell them everything. I only tell the Pink Gang everything."
After Shilu made a brief court appearance, only to find the police had been given another 14 days to hold her without charge, Sampath visited a friend of hers who worked as a lawyer at the Atara District Jail.
"He said to me, first of all, find the whereabouts of her father. Unless he comes, the court will not hear you. Our main worry was that Acce would refuse to come due to fear."
If the legislator managed to silence Shilu's family, then the girl stood less of a chance of being freed. Like the time when she ran for office against Thugia Patel's mother, Sampath realised that her biggest challenge would be giving people the courage and strength to stand up against a powerful opponent. Despite the Pink Gang's vast village network, it proved difficult to locate Acce. Then Sampath found a labourer, one of the men who had helped to build her house, who had some information. He was afraid to speak with her in public, but said he would meet her at his house the next day. When she went there, he was gone. She was running from pillar to post when suddenly the information she was chasing fell into her lap. Her own daughter, Nisha, who was tutoring someone in a nearby village, glimpsed her quarry when she went to a relative's home. He was hiding there in fear of his life. Sampath couldn't believe her luck. She contacted him immediately by phone.
"I am the Pink Gang commander," she said.
I have seen you in the paper. You are fighting for Ashilu," Acce responded.
Then he cried as he told her about the threats on his life. He was not sure he had the courage to speak up against the legislator. She would need to give him some of hers. Sampath brought Acce to the square outside the Banda District Court to meet Jay Karan Bhai, who worked in a hole-in-the-wall lawyer's office tucked neatly under a great banyan tree on the far end of the square. An affable middle-aged man with pink vitiligo patches on his skin, he is one of many unofficial Pink Gang lawyers. From his small shed, he has helped Sampath fight countless battles on a pro bono basis. However, Jay did not consider vigilante tactics legitimate or effective in the long run. The Pink Gang, to his relief, almost always turned to the law first for justice. When Sampath brought Acce to him that day, he dropped what he was doing and greeted them both warmly. He always found time to meet with Sampath. She explained that the Pink Gang was taking on Shilu's case. Jay asked Acce about his daughter and was taken aback by the spiteful way he spoke of her. The man was torn between blaming himself and blaming Shilu for the mess they found themselves in. He called her a whore one minute and was beating his chest and weeping with regret the next. Seeing the turmoil in him, the lawyer asked him gently if he wanted to get his daughter out of jail and whether he would cooperate with them. He assured them that he did want her to be free. He was angry, but his rage was not so blind that he wanted to see his own daughter remain in one of Uttar Pradesh's notorious prisons. The next course of action, the lawyer explained, would be to get Shilu bail and file a complaint against Dwivedi's men for threatening Acche. The Pink Gang would submit the bail application on his behalf.
"Are you going to get my daughter out of jail?" Acche asked Sampath.
She promised they would. They then drafted a formal complaint against the legislator for all the threats on his life he had been receiving. After it was written, Sampath organised a small press conference. Standing in front of the courthouse, Acche told the assembled journalists about the intimidation he had experienced and rolled up his trouser leg to show an injury he claimed the legislator's men had inflicted on him.
"They have hit me very hard. They hit me on the back and also the head," he said, pointing to the places on his body.
He then took out his formal complaint, and not knowing how to read, he held it up for the TV cameras to zoom in and read. Acche's public declaration would make it easier for the media to put more pressure on Dwivedi, but they would still have to treat the situation with care.
"My journalist friend at the Hindustan, Amit, told me that police are tied up with the legislator and to maintain the pressure, and he would keep writing about the case."
But she learned that he too had been threatened. People stood outside his office with guns, glaring at him as he came and went. He told Sampath,
"I decided if I'm shot dead, I'll say fine. At least I will have died for something. At least I'm writing the truth and working for justice." "We used to encourage each other all the time not to be afraid of anything," Sampath says proudly.
In the face of such danger, it was vital to have allies she could count on. Sampath hired a driver and dropped Acche back home in his village some 2 hours away. By this time it was late, and she was uneasy about travelling so late at night through some of the most undeveloped and dangerous corners of Bundelkhand. They drove down a lonely road past white-painted huts that gleamed eerily in the moonlight. There were no people to be seen outside as the villagers went to sleep at nightfall. After her driver took a right turn onto a deserted main road, she noticed the lights of another car coming around the bend. The headlights, on full beam, shone brightly in the rear-view mirror, blinding her and the driver. A tight knot formed in Sampath's stomach. Someone was following her. Suddenly the car overtook hers and then slowed down right in front of them. Her driver, alarmed, tried to overtake the car from the right but could not. In a place as isolated as this, anything could happen, thought Sampath.
"Sampath ji, I'm leaving you here and going back," the driver said. "What? How can you leave me on my own in the middle of nowhere? You're a man. They're my enemies, not yours, huh? I am here now, so don't be scared. Go on, try to pass him again."
The driver hesitated.
"Go!"
Sampath cried. He yanked the wheel decisively to the side, sending the car lurching out of its lane. The car ahead suddenly moved forward in front of them, slamming on the brakes. Sampath's car skidded to a halt. Then the mysterious car sped off, leaving a cloud of dust in its wake.
Meera Sayal was reading from The Pink Sari Revolution by Armana Fontella Khan. I'm sorry, that was Armana Fontanella Khan. The book is abridged by Eileen Horn, produced by Clive Brill, and is a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4. This is BBC Radio 4, and now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Friday the 2nd of August. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey and Faroes. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Rockall 993, slow moving, deepening 986 by 1800 Friday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking North Utsira, South Utsira. South easterly 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8 later. Rain or thundery showers, fog patches at first in Viking. Moderate or good, occasionally very poor in Viking. 40s. Southeast, veering south, 5 to 7, decreasing 4 at times, rain then showers, fog patches at first, moderate or good, occasionally very poor for a time. Cromarty, 4th.